Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. Dom, the Lumberjacky Wednesday edition, happy hour. Hell, dude, we've turned the calendar. We're in November. Does that mean the pumpkin spice season is over?
It's always pumpkin spice season, Crudy.
I don't drink this stuff. Not a big coffee guy. Definitely not a pumpkin spice guy.
Well, if they made a pumpkin spice diet Mountain Dew, you'd drink the hell out of that, wouldn't you?
Maybe. Maybe. You know, girls. I was really hoping to come back and start this hour with some reporting on the testimony of young Trump Jr. Donnie Jr. Fredo.
Yeah.
He's giving testimony in the today. New York fraud trial. And as soon as he's done, then it's Beavis's turn. Or is he Butthead? I forget which of the brothers is which. Eric. It's back-to-back Trump son testimony today, perhaps tomorrow, if necessary, for Eric. And then the Don, he's given testimony on Monday, at least is scheduled to. And I understand the first daughter, Ivanka, you know, the one daddy favors most. Well, she's supposed to give testimony next Wednesday in this fraud trial, but she's filed one more appeal. Trying to get out of it. If your dad was Donald Trump, would you be trying to get out of testifying against him? I think I would.
Why, out of loyalty or fear?
A little of both.
Come on, man.
You wouldn't testify against your daddy, would you? If you could help it.
Honestly, dear father has passed, so I'll never have to worry about that. But I don't know, man, if someone's, you know, in charge, you know, responsible for an insurrection, and I, you know, appreciate a democracy, I may have to set the family loyalty aside, which of course she will do because she is her father's daughter. She will protect herself and throw the old man under the bus if that's what she needs to do. That's my personal opinion.
Well, nobody wants to go to jail for Trump, do they? I mean, maybe Weisselberg.
Yeah.
So what can you tell me? Does anybody have news of how this testimony went? I even tried the Fox News Digital. Man, of course, they're not covering it.
I got it on the Raw story, man.
Oh, Raw story. Why didn't I start there? The only news aggregator we need here for the Devil's Advocate's preparation, the Raw story. You start. I'll jump in.
Reports. All right. It was the first time Donald Trump Jr. stepped foot in the courtroom, though his brother Eric has been present for much of the proceedings and has been largely polite to others present, even shaking hands with Attorney General Letitia James, who brought the lawsuit against his family's business, said MSNBC's legal correspondent Laura Jarrett. Trump Jr. can take the Fifth Amendment in the trial, though experts have said what is expected to be heard is a lot of, I don't recall, and I don't know, and claims that he didn't have any experience on the day-to-day operations of the Trump Organization that echoes what he said in his deposition. The testimony began with a group of photographers rushing in and taking shots. I should have worn makeup, said Trump Jr. He was first asked who his employer was, and he seemed uncertain. I believe it's still Trump Payroll Corporation, he said. When asked about his experience, Don Jr. claimed that he doesn't know much about accounting. Quote, that's what CPAs are for. He went on to say that he and other executives paid such financial experts, so they would handle such things. The judge didn't like that comment, saying it was non-responsive. It's an indication of how the testimony will likely unfold, said MSNBC's Lisa Rubin in a legal analysis. She continued telling Katie Turr that Trump Jr. admitted on the stand clearly, openly, almost proudly, that he doesn't know anything about GAAP or other accounting standards or the accounting standards board that sets those rules. He's basically saying, I have nothing to offer in that respect because I relied on my lawyers and accountants to do that work for me. I paid them millions of dollars. She said the judge saying it was non-responsive left the attorney general a bit peeved. I did a little bit of everything. Everything from design, sales, marketing, finance, construction, you name it, Don Jr. continued. After his father became president, he said he, Eric, and CFO Alan Weisselberg took over the company. Rubin noticed an odd comment from Trump Jr. in which he described himself as on equal footing with his siblings until that time in 2017 when they took over, he said they reported to their father. Occasionally, Jr. fidgeted his thumbs and shifted his body, appearing to sit up taller. His suit was reportedly very blue. He went on to say that he wasn't the one who fired Weisselberg and didn't know if it fell to his father, to his brother to do. Trump's lawyer objected to the question and judge agreed, telling prosecutors to move it along. Weisselberg, of course, chairman of the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust until he was indicted on tax fraud charges and was ultimately sentenced to 5 months in prison. At that point, he stepped down and Don Jr. was the only one in charge. That was the entity that Trump said he funneled all his money into so as to be overseen by his heirs. Trump claimed it would remove all possibility of impropriety, but Bishop pointed out that the claim was debatable. As Rubin pointed out, the ultimate authority post-Trump inauguration was held by Eric Weisselberg and Trump Jr. Weisselberg wasn't there after some legal trouble he got himself into. So, recap. Junior doesn't know anything about accounting. He does the finance and some marketing and all sorts of other things, but you know, you leave the financing up to the experts.
Well, well done, Nate. Ivanka Trump files a desperate notice of appeal in an effort to duck fraud trial testimony. You know, I'd try to duck daddy's glare if I could as well, Dom. Ivanka has filed notice she will make another attempt not to testify in the $250 million fraud trial brought against her family's company. Will you excuse me? I got to get my hair done. In a filing on Wednesday, Trump, that's Ivanka, gave notice that she would appeal New York Supreme Court Justice Arthur Engoron's ruling that she must testify on November 8th, even though she was dismissed as a party in the case. Now, Ivanka's father, former President Donald Trump, has attacked Engoron for ordering his daughter to testify. His adult sons, Don Jr. and Eric, were also expected to testify. And in fact, we can confirm Fredo was taking the stand and confirmed that he knows nothing, he saw nothing, he knows nothing. And really, we're not exactly what he does around here. Do I get that part right, Dom?
I think that sounds about right. What would you say you do here? I'm a people person.
One other thing, Don Jr., as he was entering the courtroom, Dom, well, someone on the social medias were attacking him, heckling him, if you will. I'd like to share it because I find it a little clever. Little funny, just minutes before walking into the New York Supreme Court, Donald Trump Jr. found time to call out a heckler who accused him of being addicted to cocaine. The post on the, well, I guess that's the Twitter social media platform on Wednesday, Trump called attention, Trump Jr., Fredo, called attention to a person who alleged the former president's son was on coke. Trump Jr. is the joke on coke. The commentator repeatedly posted, you know, he was tagging different people, telling his joke over and over and tagging different people. And then he was raised up by Donald Trump Jr. in response. That guy definitely wants to date me, Trump wrote in response. And as you read it, it's Trump Jr. is a joke on coke. Trump Jr. is a joke on coke. If someone was posting that over and over again on the social medias, the, you know, let's call it the Twitter, the X, Dom is a joke on coke. Would you say he wants to date me? Is that your...
Yeah, that doesn't... I mean, no, that would not be my response at all. No, of course not. I mean, but of course he's being snarky. He's, you know, embracing it, just being Trump Jr., I guess. But whatever. I mean, people are going to heckle. Heckler's going to heckle, man. Hate is going to hate. That's fine. The real problem, the real question is, what did Donald Trump Jr. know, and when did he know? Was he involved? No, I know nothing. I know nothing. Judge wasn't buying. Now, let's not forget now. They're already guilty of the fraud. Right, this is now we're talking about how much is the fine, how much is the civil penalty for engaging in years-long fraud. And I saw something, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically a testimony analysis of how much money the banks lost because Donald Trump lied about his assets.
Meaning lost through failure to charge appropriate interest rates due to risk. Right.
They made money, but they would have made like $100 million more, something along those
lines. $168 million, Dom, if I read the reporting correctly.
All right. So you saw it as well.
I did.
So, yeah, I mean, that was an astounding number. That's a big number. I mean, no wonder why Tish James came up with $250 million. Trump's and the Trump family, oh, man, everyone made money. The banks made money. Everyone's happy. Yeah, but you made a bunch of money, and you denied them to make their money, because if they would have charged you what they would have normally have charged you, they would have charged everybody else, because if you didn't, you know, do your fraud, you would have had to pay a higher interest rate. Perhaps the terms of the loan would have been different. They'd have made more money on you. I think they call that opportunity cost, but it's fraud, no matter how you look at it.
$168 million in interest saved, Dom. That's not fraud, is it? That's just looking for a deal. You know,
come on. You made money. You could have made $168 million more dollars, but you made money. So what's the problem? No harm, no foul, right?
Dominic, apparently Don Jr., Fredo, is rap testimony for the day and is set to go back on the witness stand tomorrow. Eric Trump is also slated to be called by the AG's lawyers once Don Jr.'s testimony concludes. And the father goes Monday. And Ivanka goes next Wednesday, at least if that's what the courts decide. They've already said once she must testify. And the mood was lightened up after Don Jr., an estate prosecutor, was asked how to pronounce the word revocable following a short afternoon break. AG Colleen Federi asked the former first son what the Donald J. Trump revocable trust was, prompting Arthur Engoron to interject, "Now that we finally have a trustee in the courtroom, we can finally ask if it's revocable or revocable." I assume it's revocable. If the judge has to ask, who knows the answer? More devil's advocates. Not us, clearly.
60% of the time, they're right every time. The devil's advocate.
Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Phone lines open. Join us 844-967-2789. Of course, stick around. Our pal Rick Smith, Rick Smith Show. He's coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about some UAW labor strikes.
Dom, the punchline of the story, I didn't quite get to it before the break. The judge in the fraud trial, New York fraud trial, Trump Jr., Fredo, as we like to call him, gave testimony today and at a lighter point, according to the New York Post. During the trial today, the judge asked, is it a revocable or revocable trust? And he asked the question of Don Jr. as he was part of the revocable trust. Your Honor, it's a good question, but I'm not sure which it actually is. Don Jr. answered, why would you need to know that? The lawyer then asked the question using the pronunciation revocable, to which Don Jr. joked, I'm not sure what that is. I only understand revocable, prompting chuckles from the gallery.
Wow.
He also drew laughter, according to the New York Post, real-time reporting from the courtroom scene today, Dom. No cameras in the courtroom, at least not in real time, not live video feed. That's a little bit of a disappointment. I'm looking forward to the Georgia trial being televised. But a lawyer with the AG's office began questioning Don Jr. about his educational background and about a series of accounting terms. Now, Dom, you know well, I never took an accounting class or a business class or really any of those sort of classes. I know you've taken a few. You've got your MBA. I less so. But somewhere out there on the street, I learned terms like GAAP accounting, generally accepted accounting principles. It's kind of right in the name, right?
Yes.
And GAAP accounting, if I understand it, and, you know, I'm just a layman out here, Dom. I'm not a smart guy like Trump Jr. But GAAP accounting says, well, you account for future liabilities when you do the math. Meaning here in the state of Wisconsin, we actually do what? It's cash-based accounting. Meaning that if you got $1 in your bank account, you balance the books.
That's right.
Even
man.
If, like Scott Walker, the former governor of the state of Wisconsin, even if you throw debt into next month, which creates a deficit next month, but today you balance the books, which is a legal requirement under cash accounting principles, but really doesn't mean anything because it just means you got $1 in the bank. But GAAP accounting, Dom, that's the way it should be done, right? That would acknowledge future liabilities.
Yes.
And we've had promises here in the state of Wisconsin that at some point, I think it was Scott Walker that made this promise, we're going to institute GAAP accounting principles. Have we done so, Dom, in the 12 plus years we've been doing this radio show?
No, not at all. Why would they want to do that and actually have a real financial? I mean, the CAFR reports here in the state of Wisconsin, they do crunch them in a different way. You can look at that, but no, that's not to my understanding how it's not been updated to GAAP accounting. Now, what's the point? Now, Don Jr., was he unaware of the differences in the accounting? And does it really even matter? Because, you know, listen, I mean, this is about you know, Donald Trump saying something's 10,000 square feet. 30,000 square feet when it's an actually 10,000 square feet. I mean, you don't need to be an MBA or a student of GAAP accounting to understand that that's just wrong. That you're tripling the size of something because you can claim it's worth more. That's very basic. You know what I'm saying? Hey, how many sandwiches do you have, Junior? Well, I've got one. No, you got three. Oh, I got three. No, that's not how it works, man. You don't need to be a financial genius to get that. You don't need to be a financial genius to know that if you have, rents that are standard, you can't raise the rents to market rates and assuming and looking at the valuation saying, oh, I can raise my rents to market rates. No, you can't do that either. You don't need to be a financial wizard to know these things.
Well, Dominic, as mentioned before, I don't mean to be redundant. Don Jr. admitted to not knowing what some of the, let's call them, accounting terms meant. I rely on professionals and CPAs. We pay millions of dollars and they have great degrees. They do. Now, Dom, I also pay a CPA to do my taxes, but I would hope at the end of it, I have some basic understanding of what he's put on the paper, as that's information that came from me, right? When you go to the accountant, you present your financials. The Trump organization has presented their financials, and then the CPA shares that information potentially. But these are still documents that are created by the Trump
organization. Originated by the Trump organization, yes. They're the ones. I mean, the CPAs are not in the back rooms, on QuickBooks sending out invoices. They're not doing that. They take and they work with the information that is provided to them by their clients. Unless you want them to go in and do a full-ass audit, which I guarantee you the Trump organization is not about.
Well, he was going to release his taxes as soon as the audit was done, right, Dom? Yeah. Couple weeks.
As soon as the IRS audit is done, yeah, he's gonna let everybody know.
Well, back to the courtroom action with Trump Jr. So the former first son drew last from the courtroom gallery after the judge pressed Colleen Faherty, the AG's office, to phrase her questions in the positive. You know, it's always good to be positive, Dom. I try to be positive. Yeah. Do you have that understanding? Justice Arthur Engoron said, giving an example of how Faherty's question could be phrased in a positive form. Don Jr. interjected, I have no understanding. To laughs from the courtroom gallery. I think that was more of a rhetorical statement by the judge. You did not have to confirm your ignorance in that matter.
But he's happy to do so, just in case anybody questioned.
Just in case. A little bit more here. Don Jr. took the witness stand about 2:50 p.m. to be questioned about the extent of any involvement he had in pumping up his father's total assets. You know, the alleged fraud scheme, Dom. And the eldest Trump son entered the courtroom with a smile, wearing a white shirt, salmon tie, navy suit, and his black hair slicked back in typical fashion. Little powder on his nose, perhaps, Dom. You know, it's hard to tell from this far back. And maybe that's just the courtroom sketch, but looks a little white around his nose. I should have worn makeup equipped as the news. Salmon tie. It's like an off pink. I should have worn makeup equipped as news photographers. Well, you should have wiped your nose at least. As they snap pictures of him. Trump Jr. is an executive vice president at Trump Org and is accused alongside his dad and brother and the AG's office to helping inflate the value of assets. Do you think it helps his cause, Don, when he acknowledges or states to the court he has no knowledge about the business world or the environment in which he works? Is that somehow an affirmative defense? Is that a
ignorance is no excuse. Crude. But this one blows my mind from the Hill. Let's just say this again. The banks, according to Lost Interest, the banks hand out loans, calculations determined across four Trump Organization assets. Banks lost out by, you know, adhering to the fraudulent numbers that the Trump Organization provided them. They lost out on just over $168 million in interest. I mean, at some point you start talking about real money.
Yeah, but he paid them all back. Just minus the interest. Minus the real price to risk interest rate that they should have been charged by Deutsche Bank or whatever other Russian oligarch was funding these operations. Maybe it was, what do they call it, money laundering.
You never
allegedly
know.
Come back. More Devil's Advocates and our pal, union labor guy, Rick Smith.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition, the Happier Happy Hour. We are happy to welcome back a friend of ours. He is Rick Smith, a Teamster, a talk radio host, a friend of ours. Rick, how you doing, man? I'm trying to
play. I'm great, Mike. Appreciate you taking some time for us.
Buddy, I'm pretending like I'm a working man. I'm wearing a flannel today. My wife said, look like a working stiff for a change, Crudy. You've been a working stiff your whole life, and you've been doing a radio show for a period of time here. Rick, how long have you been doing, you know, politics and labor and life on the radio, my friend?
I've been a card-carrying Teamster over 35 years. I did organizing. I've done, you know, picket, you know, strike captain stuff. For the last 18 years, we've been doing talk radio. The idea was balancing the airwaves and taking on some of the right-wing insanity that my truck driver buddies were spewing years ago. And still do. Look, I mean, the reality is the right wing has done a masterful job of brainwashing a generation of working people to believe that a billionaire has got their interests at heart. And I was listening to you a minute ago talking about the Dumb Junior's testimony and the fact that, you know, Trump, you know, made $168 million off the banks. And I know exactly how that's going to be framed. You know, he cheated those banks out of $168 million. He's so smart. He cheated the IRS in New York out of millions of dollars. Oh, he's so smart. He screwed all those creditors with six bankruptcies. Oh, so smart. Without realizing that we working stiffs are the ones who pick up the bill every single time. We're the ones who get stiffed. But hey, he's smart.
Suckers pay taxes. Rick Smith, our friend. Rick, a little bit of sad news. I want to get it out there. You're discontinuing this radio show at a foreseeable period of time. You're wrapping it up, and I'm a little sad to hear you're leaving.
It's sad to hear that we're leaving talk radio. Look, this has been my passion for the last 18 years. It's been my activism. It's been how I've wanted to fight the righteous fight. But I got to tell you, we're moving to something I think that is going to be much bigger and much better. We've signed an exclusive agreement with Free Speech TV. We're going to be doing an hour a day of the kind of content that, you know, I think working people need to have. We're going to be in virtually every home in this country. You're going to be able to find us in the leisure of your home, and you'll be able to see my ugly mug. Yes, I have a face for radio, but, you know, we've been doing the TV for a little bit, and now we're going full bore into it. And then we're going to take that audio from the TV show, and we're going to give it to the stations to play. So we're not going away completely, but we're not going to be doing live terrestrial, which, again, is where my passion is and where the fight is. I think the thing I love about talk radio is you never know what's coming with the next phone call. But we're really looking forward to the new year and this new direction we're going.
Rick, you're going to have to buy some salmon colored ties. Very photogenic.
I got to tell you, you know, you won't catch me dead in one of those. And I've told my wife, if you put me in a tie when I will come back and I will haunt you forever.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got a friend of ours. He is Rick Smith. Currently, he is the host of the Rick Smith Radio Show, nationwide and part of the Civic Media Network. Rick's hanging up the talk radio microphone on December 1st and concentrating all his efforts on a free speech TV show. And of course, the workaday life and raising kids and doing all the stuff you do, Rick. The tours, Rick. It's easier to travel and just transmit back audio. But Rick, do you have any anticipation that the television show is going to be on the road like you often are?
That's the plan. The plan is that we want to get out and we want to do more. You know, like anyone, you know, you're tethered to this chair between the hours of, you know, for me, it's 9 to 11 Eastern time. This will give us the opportunity to get out and to do more meeting people, do more getting into, you know, the mix. And with the presidential election coming up, planning on making both conventions again, planning on getting out on the road and meeting people and sharing stories. And you know, look, I believe in this era with all the labor stuff that's going on, we belong out on the road, out on picket lines. We should be out there, you know, talking to people and sharing stories. And that's where we're going.
Obviously, UAW, there's been a big strike, and it seemingly is having impact. We see labor negotiations going on. We see a lot of conversation about unionized labor in the media. How important do you think this is for the re-election of Joe Biden? Joe Biden literally marched with UAW workers. He has been with labor on this. And how undermining is this to the billionaire's efforts, the Cheeto Messiah, to claim that he is indeed the candidate of the working man? Well, I didn't see him on the union line. In fact, I saw him at a non-union shop in Michigan trying to claim some love. But what's your impression? Does this matter to the working stiff?
I think it's going to matter to a lot of working people, because it does show a commitment that you haven't seen from a president in my lifetime. Look, I grew up as a kid with Jimmy Carter being elected, saying, hey, he's going to undo Taft-Hartley. That didn't happen. I voted for Bill Clinton solely because he was going to get strike replacement passed. That didn't happen. I shook Obama's hand twice, and he told me, Rick, we're going to get something better than the Employee Free Choice Act. Got nothing. And what working people have gotten accustomed to is Democrats making a lot of promises and not following through. They're talking the talk, they're not walking the walk. Well, in this case, we got a guy who's not only talking the talk, but found Obama's comfortable shoes and got out there and was walking the walk. So I think this is going to help him. And I think it has to help him, because this is how we're going to make people's lives better. This is how you're going to see the wage gains. This is how you're going to see worker empowerment. And I'm hoping like we've never seen before, because, you know, the victories with the Teamsters and UPS, the victory here with the UAW and the Big Three, this is sending clear messages that, hey, workers have had enough. And you're already seeing a number of people in both those industries, the package delivery industry and the auto industry, are saying, hey, we're raising wages. Look at us giving benefits to our workers. Look at us trying to keep up. And I got to tell you, I think in this moment, it's not going to be enough. Because those promises that corporate America have given in the past have always been taken away. It's only when you get that contract with signatures on the bottom that it's enforceable.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Rick Smith, host of the Rick Smith Show, joining us. Rick, great to be with you, man. Thanks for coming around. GM, the last ones to finally settle, to agree to a contract. And you mentioned it, man. It kind of stole my fire. Toyota, who has, my understanding, does not have unionized labor. They announced big raises for everybody. So it's not just that the unions are helping out those the membership. They're also, by pushing the market around, increasing wages for those who are not yet union members. And my understanding, UAW President Sean Fain, well, he's going to go after the Toyota. He's going to go after Tesla. He is all about it. And I saw a headline at CBS News, Rick, you know, lamenting the fact, well, you know, can the auto industry absorb these costs? What's going to happen? But my understanding, what, 4 or 5% of the cost of vehicles are labor. So right. they can absorb that. What's your sense on how this is impacting the market in its entirety, not just at the big three?
Well, I mean, it's gonna hurt the profits a little bit. They're still gonna make billions of dollars. Rest assured, corporate America will be okay.
They're gonna be okay. All right, good.
They're gonna get a little extra cheese on their Whopper. They'll be fine. But this is going to help working families do much better. It's going to help bring these kind of jobs back to somewhere near the gold standard of working class employment as they had been in the past. For me, this is an enormous win. But I got to tell you, one of the things that I think is really important that nobody's talking about, the fact that the UAW put on the table a 32-hour work week. And I know, oh, they're asking for too much. No, this Democrats, for my Democratic Party friends, this is how you negotiate. You start out with all of your wish list stuff on the table, and then you slowly move things off to get what you really want. But the 32-hour work week is something that we should be grabbing onto and making, you know, something that we fight for in the future, because as technology takes over, AI and robotics and all of that, we're going to need less people. But people are still going to need jobs, so they should be working less hours. And for me, this is kind of that 1850s, 1860s moment where we start saying, hey, we don't want to work from sun up to sundown 6 days a week. We want to work 8 hours a day, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. Now we should be doing the same thing with our generation going, hey, a 32-hour work week is the minimum. We should be looking to get even lower amounts of work hours and still be able to support our families because of the technological and productivity gains that are going to happen.
Well, and the productivity gains that have happened over the last, you know, several decades, Rick, I mean, have been basically pocketed by the corporations. I mean, yep. This has been a long time coming. How important do you think this is for the next generation of organized labor? I mean, this guy, Sean Fain, and I wasn't really dialed into it until this really came up. The guy's a fighter, man, and he's motivating people. He's selling it, and people are buying it. Do you think that's going to continue with the next generation, Rick?
Well, I think so, because, look, I think young kids have seen their parents get screwed over, just ground down. You know, and, look, my generation, our generation, if you look at the numbers, come retirement time, we're screwed. And, you know, the millennials are even worse off. So I think you're seeing this younger generation going, you know, I don't think we want to end up like this. I don't want to be used up, you know, kicked to the curb and have nothing at the end of the road. I want my labor to mean something. I want my labor to be rewarded, and I want to be able to have some life-work balance. So I think we're moving into an era where working people aren't going to tolerate the same kind of things that happened before the pandemic. And understand, the pandemic, I believe, was a game changer. Yep. Because we told every working person who showed up to work, you're essential. You're a hero. And then once it was sort of over, it's like, oh, back to before the pandemic thinking, well, that hasn't happened. And I hope it doesn't.
Our fine guest, Rick Smith. Rick, let me play devil's advocate. 4-day work week, just a minute. If employers cannot find sufficient labor under current market conditions, how's a 4-day work week play out?
I don't buy that we can't find labor. I think you can't find labor at what you're willing to pay. Yeah, the restaurant in town that wants to pay minimum wage, $2.96 an hour here in Pennsylvania, and then $7.25. You're gonna struggle finding people who are willing to take those jobs, because there are warehouse jobs that you could make upwards of $20 an hour. Look, what I'm saying, as technology comes around and they keep telling us that here in the next 15 years, half of the jobs that we currently do will be eliminated and be done by computers and AI and robots and all kind of automation, all this stuff. We should not be going, hey, working people, it was great while it lasted. We're glad you were here. But hey, there's the door in the curb. Good luck, whatever. We should be talking about how a transition is going to happen as we lower the number of hours for working people, but still keep people attached to jobs. Because I'm still someone who believes that that work is important. There are therapeutic qualities to a day well done, a job well done, and making your own way. But I think we've got to gain and make progress in the technological gains. And I think a shorter work week is a way to get there.
Our fine guest, Rick Smith from The Rick Smith Show, still playing out right here across the Civic Media Network, 8 to 10 Central Time, at least for one more month. But Rick, a little digression here at the end. They have apparently found Jimmy Hoffa. He's under third base at County Stadium in Milwaukee, or at least that's the conspiracy theory being spread here in Fox News, in the local press. Rick, what do you think of our little local conspiracy theory?
Are they selling t-shirts? I mean, you know, there have been so many places where Hoffa's been found. Okay. And they've done a lot of digging. They've done a lot of, looking. They haven't found him. I tend to believe the guy who wrote the book, I Hear You Paint Houses, his right-hand man, I believe that's how it happened. Sherman, is the one who offed him, and they basically took him to a crematorium, and he was gone that day. But hey, it's fun to go, hey, we found him. It's fun to, maybe we should have parties at all of these, maybe do some fundraising. And hey, it's a great opportunity to talk about organized labor and what a great guy Jimmy Hoffa was for working people and the lives that he made better. Because I'll tell you, there were only a handful of people that my grandfather spoke well of, and Jimmy Hoffa was one of them. Because he took a guy with an eighth grade education who was working 16 hours a day for 17 cents an hour on the back of a coal truck and made him a solidly middle class working person in this country just because of the Teamsters and Jimmy Hoffa.
Rick Smith, always appreciate having a working man come around. Thank you. Don't be a stranger, Rick.
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it.
More Devils, other side.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. But stick around, Maggie Dawn from the Maggie Dawn Show. She's coming up at the 6 o'clock hour.
I want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one friend of ours, working stiff Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show, as a radio product, coming to an end 30 days from now. That'll be a sad ending, All great things end at some point, except the Devil's Advocate so far. We'll see.
So far. Yeah. Rick's a cool cat, man. Love his perspective. Love hearing the labor, man. Expect that he will, no matter where his path leads, we'll remain friends with Rick, and we'll hang out and bring him around and get everybody fired up. We really appreciate Rick Smith.
Sports Talk Live in lacrosse lived far beyond my college residency, yeah. Dom. That went on for 20 years or more. My little,
I know, and you were college a long time.
Not quite 20. Close to 10. Approaching a decade. Someday I've got to clarify that I was working full-time while attending college, just trying to get my prerequisite 12, 13 credits, backfill a couple of retakes for classes I didn't meet the sufficient GPA requirements in. It was hard. I'm telling you, college was hard for me. Not the college, but the working full time while I was in college.
yeah, that's
got
that's
in the way lot. Of going to the college. Couldn't afford to go to the college without the full time job that paid for the college. So something had to give, and it was often the college because couldn't give up drinking five nights a week.
The indiscretions of youth. 844-967-2789. For real, I mean, really love Rick Smith, the excitement that he brings, and this guy, Sean Fain from the UAW. I think, you know, and I would hope that with the availability of information, and if you want to know, you can know, and you don't have to be a CPA to understand and know where the money's come from and how it works. And as he said, you know, a lot of people, you know, working lots of hours for very little wages over the course of humanity, man. And when people get together and they realize it and they form these unions and force the corporations to collectively bargain, it's a show of strength and unity and awareness, right? And education, because those folks, they know what's on the line. You know what I mean? I mean, they're buying in. And I hope that that continues. And I hope that also translates into electoral victories as well. Because, I mean, there's the Republican Party, to my opinion, is not the party of the working man. You know what I'm saying? That's not them. They may claim it. They know they're out there. And of course, as Rick mentioned, a lot of folks spend a lot of time in their car, and you put on the game, and next thing you know, the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys and all the right-wing local talk comes on. And if that's all you listen to, that's all you hear, well, it starts to sound pretty reasonable. These guys are newsy. They're talking about stuff I don't really know a lot about, but man, it makes me feel how it makes me feel. Maybe it's new information for them. Maybe it solidifies a belief they already had. But we need to counteract that, right? We need to have an educated and activated society. And I appreciate that from the UAW, and I appreciate Rick's efforts in that, because that's part of it, man. And no matter what you think, I don't want to be part of society. You're part of it. You're part of it, people. You don't want to be too bad. Here you are. You can do the Ted Kaczynski cabin thing and go off and hide out. But, you know, that's not reality for lots and lots of people. Here we are. Let's work together. Let's, come to a basic understanding of what the scenarios are, what the history has been, where we are now, and where we want to go. Because it's not only do you have the right to collectively bargain and have better wages and better working environments, take that, use it. Advocate for that in elections, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the presidential stuff. It's on the local side of it as well. Stay involved, stay active, stay fired up. Really love it when Rick comes around, and really appreciate the UAW. I mean, when Toyota's raising, what, 10, almost 10, maybe 12%, they're giving raises out. Now, maybe not the 30%-ish that seems to be coming from the UAW based on my quick, brief reading, but it's action. It's lifting all boats, man. That's great.
Dominic,
wouldn't happen if they weren't on strike.
Next on the Civic Media Dial is our pal Maggie Dawn, the Maggie Dawn Show. And then coming up at 7:00 Central Time, the Empowered Caregiver Show, hosted by Liza Hellenbrand. And I was speaking with Liza today. Her topic, the Raise Family Caregivers Act. She was in DC last week, as I might have mentioned on the show. She was with us last week. And she was out there advocating and learning what important things she should be advocating for. And I would tell you, home healthcare workers, they need a union.
Yes.
They need a freaking union. These are people being abused by the system, Dom. Very, very difficult to sustain. And people that need this sort of care, she has had guests on her show, gentlemen, I believe cystic fibrosis, confined to a wheelchair, confined to his bed. Confined every day, trapped until his home healthcare worker shows up. If they show up, hopefully on time, if they show up, but very difficult to keep professionals in these roles if they've got no assurance, no quality of workplace assurance, if they've got no labor protections, no union protections. So I believe that will be a topic of conversation on the Empowered Caregiver Show as well. And during the course of this week, she brought to my attention a nurse at UW Hospital here in Madison, an experienced nurse getting ready to retire because the conditions blow. They have really deteriorated at the UW Madison, according to this nurse. I'm not in the healthcare profession. I don't live it. The only experience I've had with that hospital has been universally good. But I can tell you the nurses... And the nurses are the backbone of these hospitals. The nurses are retiring en masse. They get signing bonuses, these new hires. 2 years later, as soon as they pay out, they're gone. So the institutional knowledge since Act 10, since this decision that healthcare professionals that work for, UW Hospital, is that really a state function? Well, apparently they're under the same Act 10 guidelines. They can't unionize. Even if there's a willingness with the UW hospital system to recognize their union, legally, under current circumstance in the state of Wisconsin, Act 10 as it is, we are seeing the undermining of our healthcare delivery system, the undermining of our nurses, less experienced nurses making less money with a lot less commitment to their institutions. Because as soon as they can, they get the hell out. That's what the lack of unionization does. Folks, we're done for today. A couple of working stiffs. We don't work real hard. Not like Rick Smith. Jeez. Or
speak for yourself, man.
Actual people. I also want to thank Bill Davis, our earlier guest from the Wisconsin River Alliance. No, you work pretty hard, mailing it in a couple hours a day, Dom. It's not ditch digging. It's not truck driving.
That is not.
But it is the greatest radio product ever. So I hope you enjoyed. Tune in again tomorrow. We'll do it on the Thursday edition.